Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 92, Fireworks in the Lair. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have the snow trooper to my scout trooper. We have Carl LeClaire.
Oh, it's so cold over there. How are things going over that way, Scout?
Oh, well, so far so good, but I seem like there's eyes watching me. It's a little creepy.
Eyes?
Eyes. Little furry eyes.
You should just cuddle with them. That'll be better for you. Trust me. They're so cuddly.
Cuddly and cannibalistic. Anyways.
Cuddly and the tumblies. Oh, boy. Anyway, welcome back.
Woo! We have another Wampa's Lair episode. We missed last week because we were both, like, out of town over the weekend.
Yes.
Yes. But in the meantime, we inadvertently released our last episode, episode 91, on both our feed and the Star Wars Beyond the Films feed.
Lisa made a mistake.
Yes, it just a little mistake in the posting process, and
let me give you guys some behind the scenes. When I told Jason my mistake, he goes, "You saw in big doo doo this time."
I actually did not, but
come on, let him live a little.
All right, fine. But the guys over at Beyond the Films were kind enough to just let it lie and weren't too concerned about it, and it was awesome because we got some new listeners and some new likes on our Facebook page, and we really appreciate that for all those that only checked us out because we were on the Beyond the Films feed. Glad you guys came over, and hopefully you are back for this episode.
Yes, thank you, Nathan and Mark, for letting my mistake lie to rest.
Yes. But other than that, we've had a pretty good week since this last episode. I blew your mind on our last episode, didn't I?
You did blow my mind on the last episode. And I wanted to follow up because, like I said, when we finished recording, even when we were off the air, I said, I need to go watch Return of the Jedi. And that's exactly
what who might have forgotten, I had a theory, a brainstorm theory about why Hayden Christensen should be the ghost in Return of the Jedi, and I laid it out on the podcast to Carl and blew his mind.
Right. And if you remember, I've harped on many an episode about how much I hate the Hayden Christensen change at the end of Return of the Jedi. So when Jason blew my mind, and this just goes to say, your mind can always be changed. However, I'm going to now follow up, Jason. Are you ready?
Yes, ready.
All right. Buckle up, I'm about to make the jump to light speed.
Okay,
click. I've forgotten how much I hate space travel. all right, first off, let me say, I still do prefer Sebastian Shaw. However, I loved your point, and I actually smiled at the end of Return of the Jedi when I watched it that night. I was like, you know what, this makes a lot of sense. And here's what, I'll tell you what, Jason. If I didn't get such a still, like, awkward taste in my mouth because of Hayden Christensen, that sounded really weird. but like, if Hayden Christensen were a better actor in the prequels and like he had been, you know, a phenomenal Anakin Skywalker, I would certainly prefer him to Sebastian Shaw. But his smile, like, I just still see, like, I've heard this expression before, but like, he's got like this shit eating grin on his face where I just can't buy that he's a, I don't know, like that he's Anakin Skywalker, if that makes sense. So take out like his not so great acting in the prequels and give me like a really good strong performance from our Anakin Skywalker in the prequels. I would definitely take yours hands down because I loved your point of the fact that it It's him going, it's kind of like the Force is redeeming the darkest part of who he was. And that's really, you know, the cusp in episode three there, the way he appears in episode three is he is, you know, he's on this fence of falling into the dark. So, I mean, he is this good chosen one, the good person, but he falls off into the darkness in that particular, you know, episode. So I think it absolutely makes sense that, you know, the young Anakin Skywalker, let's just not say Hayden Christensen, the young Anakin Skywalker should be the one at the end of Return of the Jedi, because it shows us that the story comes full circle, not because we need it to remember the prequels, but it tells us full circle that this indeed is the redemption of a man that fell to the dark side. So I love your point. I absolutely like it. Just again, it's just the Hayden Christensen aspect that still turns me off. If it was a stronger performance from him in the prequels, I would absolutely love it. I'd be all about it. But yes, so for that reason, I still kind of prefer Sebastian Shaw. Mm-hmm. But your point is definitely the better point.
Awesome! Wow, I am completely shocked that I turned you on this point. So
hey, if Vader can be redeemed, my friend.
True, very true. But I am in the middle of finishing up a blog post that will go on StarWarsReport.com about this very brainstorm that I had, and it will probably come out right about the same time this episode comes out. So if you want a more detailed look at what my idea was, what I said, go ahead and check that out. And of course, we'll be sharing that on our Facebook page and Twitter once it gets posted. So I'll be finishing it up tonight and sending it in to Riley, and hopefully he'll get that posted tomorrow or over the weekend or something. So,
yes. Now, Jason, we kind of skipped over our Larian inquiry last week. We were just kind of running a little late. We had to cut things down. But this is something news related. So in a sense, we're kind of doing two Larian inquiries today. But this one is a more news-related one, and we got this question from somebody. I believe, was it on Twitter, Jason?
Yes, on Twitter, Brian Bailey.
And do you have it up? Because if not, I can just. I remember kind of. I don't remember verbatim what he asked, but
it was. Give me 1 second.
Time is up.
How upset will you be if Episode 7's release date is delayed due to Harrison Ford's 6-month rehab?
Okay, so my response to that is, I wouldn't care as much as I really want Star Wars in December, because that's the date we got. And obviously the sooner the better, because I want to see Episode 7. I would be fine with the fact if they did have to delay it to like May of 2016, because Star Wars has always come out in May. So I'm not going to fight that. And I want a good story. And from the sounds of a lot of things, Han Solo is a pretty central character to Episode 7. Whether people like that or not is, you know, up for debate. I personally don't mind it as long as it's well done. And I have a really strong feeling that it will be well done. So, you know, to me, I'd rather a delayed film than something rushed or rewritten just for the sake of an injury. And when I was reading one article last week, I never knew this because, I mean, I'm not a huge Iron Man fan, but I guess in Iron Man 3, Robert Downey Jr. got hurt and he was in rehab for not quite as long. I think it was like 4 weeks, but they just kind of stopped filming and resumed when he was ready.
And they still met their release date.
So. Yeah, exactly. So, I you know, if they need to delay it, they can, but it doesn't look like they're going to have to. I mean, I'm sure everybody's seen the pictures of Harrison Ford, you know, walking around with his prosthetic leg. You know, maybe he becomes the next Darth Vader. So, from henceforth, you shall be known as Darth Chewie.
I'm of a similar mind, but to be perfectly honest, I've heard so many different conflicting things about this. I've heard it was his ankle that was broken. I've heard it then it was his leg that was broken. Now I've heard it's back to the ankle. I don't know. So it's something on one of his lower extremities. We will just leave it at that. And I've also heard different times for how long he's supposed to be in rehab. I've heard, you know, as little as 4 weeks or 6 weeks or 8 weeks. And then I've heard, you know, 6 months now. So I have no idea. I had honestly no idea what the heck is happening with Harrison Ford. And now apparently Oscar, whatever his name is supposed to be getting a slightly more beefed up role because of this.
Oscar the Grouch, right?
Oscar what?
Oscar the Grouch.
Yes, Oscar the Grouch.
Boyega, I think. Something like that.
No.
Anyways,
okay. It's Oscar somebody. It's the Oscar guy.
Okay.
and I should know this, but I don't.
What if Oscar won an Oscar? You just won yourself, buddy. Okay, sorry.
But to be perfectly honest, it looks like they're really trying to make sure that they hit this proper release date. So... I'm happy with that, but if for some reason they want to, you know, go back and make sure that they have all the original with Han in it or whatever, and it takes longer and they have to delay it, I will be fine with it. Obviously, like Carl said, I'd love to get Star Wars as soon as possible, but if it's not the way they want it and if it's not as good as they wanted it to be, I'm fully willing to wait to get it, because with something this big, they need to do it right. So...
Yeah. So those are our thoughts on the Harrison Ford news. You know, for being 71 years old, I mean, this guy is in great shape. I mean, he'll be back at it in no time. I'm not worried at all.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. And if they have to delay it, they have to delay it. I mean, it sounds like Bob Iger isn't a big fan of a delay. The CEO of Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And that honestly does bug me a little bit. This is why I don't, again, why I'm not a big Disney fan, because they're such capitalists that they just like, oh, well, what do you mean that's not going to get done right? Well, rewrite the damn story then. Just get it done on time. It's just like, I'm just worried that they would happily sacrifice quality for timeliness. So,
and that's when Kathleen Kennedy would step up and have
right.
to sit down with Bob Iger.
Well, I guess supposedly
I trust her.
Yeah,
I trust
and
her.
It's nothing against Bob Iger. It's right. just, but again, like, make sure it's done right, and that's why I really like J.J. Abrams.
I don't think anybody's a fan of a delay at this point.
Right. Well, no. Why would you be?
If they can rework things to avoid the delay, I'm sure that's what Bob Iger is saying. If we could, you know, try and keep things on schedule, because that would make the rest of releasing the rest of these other movies, you know, that much simpler.
Right.
Because, you know, this is the start of, you know, 5 movies coming out. So,
yeah.
At
yeah.
least.
So, yep. So, but anyway, enough news. We got a matchup, a new
yes.
one. Shaak Ti versus the team of Bosk and IG-88. Or Ig-88. Iggy Pop. yeah. But we got some great responses, Jason. Why don't you take it away, my friend?
All right. Over on Facebook, Joey Letson says, Shaak Ti quickly gets killed, but as soon as the bounty hunters have their backs turned, she comes back to life and takes care of both of them. She wins and proves once again that Shaak Ti cannot be killed. A reference to her many different death scenes that we've gotten over the years. Jeffrey Beaumont says, Jedi over bounty hunters. Anthony Markham, Shaak Ti. That one just wouldn't stay dead. Mike Mankoff, Jedi. Never watched the whole Clone Wars, but Bosk is a loser. IG-88 might give her a run because of a lack of force powers, but she could probably just use the force to switch him off. Philip Leibold says, I'm going to go with a Jedi on this one. Jimmy Phillips, I just keep picturing the deleted scene from Revenge of the Sith with Shaak Ti on her knees in front of Grievous shortly before the gloating cyborg kills her. In that light, I'm giving this one to the assassin droid and his scaly counterpart. David Miller says, I've just started reading Tales of the Bounty Hunters, so my choice may be a little influenced. I'll take IG-88 and Bosk. Matthew Mark says, well, apparently IG-88 is the Death Star, so he'll just blow up whatever planet Bosk and Shaak Ti are fighting on. IG-88 wins. And that, I believe, was from Tales of the Bounty Hunter as well. Brian V. Klein says, ooh, good matchup. I'd have to go with Shaak Ti. It would take more than 2 bounty hunters, regardless of how skilled they are, to take down a Jedi Master. Roger Peroni says, this is a really good one. I'm going to have to give it to the bounty hunters. Bosk is a formidable opponent with lots of experience. Bounty hunter for over 20 years, and IG-88 is a BA droid. It would be a close one with IG-88 dismantled and Bossk with a few lost limbs, but the Hunters would win. And then on Twitter, we got a couple at AV Goins. That's our buddy Aaron Goins from Star Wars Bookworm says, "The Jedi. Always the Jedi." At Fletch Hale says, "Bossk and IG-88. If clones can kill Jedi, so can these two gems." At Balls in Play says, "Bossk and IG-88 wipe the floor with Shaak-Ti. She died twice in episode 3, deleted scenes. It is her destiny." And finally, an email from our buddy Lenny says, "I say Shaak-Ti. She has the Jedi sense on her side, so as long as she is cautious, she should be able to avoid any traps that are laid for her. Plus, she's got a lightsaber and is a fully trained Jedi master. She should be able to block any blaster shot. Bossk and IG-88 aren't up to the task. Two bounty hunters used as smugglers would be way over their heads against the Jedi." So that gives us a final Larian tally of 8 for Shaak-Ti and 6 for Bossk and IG-88. Do you have an opinion on this, Mr. LeClaire?
I do. Sorry, I was just scrambling for the mute button.
Because you're busy munching on dinner.
I know I am. Sorry about that. Just made everything Canadian. Hey, where's the Coens? Man, this is really close, because I actually had my... Like, as soon as you said it at the last show, I was like, oh, I know who's going to win this. No problem. And then just listening to all these responses... What were the numbers again?
It was 8 for Shaak-Ti and 6 for the bounty hunting duo.
Okay. 8 for Shaak-Ti, 6 for the bounty hunters. Okay. My initial response was going to be definitely Bossk and IG-88. But then I remembered Shaak-Ti in the Clone Wars. She's kind of a formidable opponent. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's on the Jedi Council, right? She's not just some random Jedi Master even. Yep. She's on the Jedi Council. She's like a comparable duelist to like Obi-Wan Kenobi. And as good as Bossk and IG-88 are, by the way, I can't stand Bossk's personification in the Clone Wars because he's all of a sudden a bumbling idiot. And I do like a lot of the references we got to the Tales of the Bounty Hunters. I love that book. And IG-88's story is the only one I actually didn't care for because I thought it was ridiculous that he's basically the Death Star.
Well, he died. So.
He does, yeah. So, you know what? I got to give it to Shaak-Ti. I just, you know, like go like our good buddy Aaron says, you know, got to be the Jedi. So I think it'd be close. I don't think she would just like go in and clean the floor with them. But I think at the end of the day, she'd definitely best the two of them. Yeah. But what say you?
I'm going to agree with you on that. Like I said, I don't think it's going to be a smackdown for her. Bossk is intelligent, and IG-88's got a whole bunch of weapons, you know, stashed away on him. So between grenades and flamethrowers and all that fun stuff, and Trandoshans in general are just crafty. But I am reminded of a quote from, I do not remember the name of the book. It was Labyrinth of Evil, the one that takes place right before the Revenge of the Sith novel. And in it, Mace Windu compares Shaak-Ti, and he is talking about Shaak-Ti, and he says that she is as beautiful as a flower and as deadly as a viper. And for some reason, that quote just always stuck in my head. And as we've seen in the Clone Wars...
Isn't that true of most women, though?
What?
Nothing. Just kidding. I said, isn't that true of most women?
Probably. but he was referring to her combat skills with the deadly as a viper bit. But as we saw in the Clone Wars, she's just as comfortable using the Force as a weapon as her lightsaber when she defended the control room on Kamino from the Aqua droids coming in. I'm going to have to give it to Shaak-Ti on this one. I think she's going to come out on top, probably with a few scrapes and bruises and stuff like that, but I don't see her losing to the bounty hunters. So that gives us a final tally of 10 for Shaak-Ti and 6 for Bossk and IG-88. So
that's a close one, though.
It was. It was a lot closer before you and I commented.
Right.
but But yes. I like these closer ones. It makes them more interesting,
right?
Than our just complete shutouts that we've had before. So, no new matchup for this episode, but we do have a new poll for you guys coming up at the end. So stick around for that. But we've got a couple things to get to before then, don't we, Mr. Leclerc?
Well, yeah, we have a topic.
Oh, one of those things.
I don't know. We're going to talk about some stuff. The most patriotic moments in Star Wars. But in honor of 4th of July tomorrow, Jason came up with this great idea of talking about our top five kind of fireworks, like, oh, wow, moments in our Star Wars experience. Mind-blowing Star Wars experiences. So not necessarily all things just from the movies, but anything in our long years of Star Wars fandom that have kind of blown our minds. So I don't know about you, Jason, but I have a couple honorable mentions. Do you have any?
I've got one.
Okay, I've got two.
Okay, well then you start.
All right, one is very quick. And because I felt like I needed to give something, I was like racking my brain for like, there's got to be something from all those years and all those novels I read. Because I mean I loved the Star Wars, you know, novels and stuff when I was growing up. And I'll always remember, and this is literally blew my mind. It's from one of the Young Jedi Knights novels by Kevin J. Anderson. It was like a young reader's book, but, you know, it basically follows Jason and Jaina Solo in the Jedi Academy. Or the Jedi... Mm-hmm. No, it's not... Yeah, it's not... It was written shortly after the Jedi Academy trilogy. And I think it's the second or third book. I can't remember the name of the title. But the villain, the young boy that turns to the dark side, the kid that becomes a dark Jedi... it's something with a Z. Where's Mark Harleman when you need him?
I know.
Right? I know, like, the head dark Jedi in the series is Brakkus, I think is his name, and it's his apprentice, like, Zook, or I probably wouldn't even pronounce it anyway.
Zek,
no. Yeah. I think it's Zek. But anyway, Zek is like...
I think he comes back to the light.
He does, yeah. He does.
Okay.
But Zek is laying in his bed, and... We get this inner dialogue about how he's taught how to use the Force, and he's trying to extinguish a candle flame. There's a candle lit next to his bed just using the Force, and it's this kind of like this dialogue. I have not read this book in easily 15 years, maybe longer. And, you know, they talk about how he uses the Force is basically he pre-visualizes what he wants to make his reality, right? Almost like what Qui-Gon says in The Phantom Menace, your focus determines your reality. And he's just like focusing on this candle, and he just keeps imagining it going out, and it does. It goes out. He uses the Force, like, by pre-imagining it, making his, you know, imagination become his reality. And I remember the night I read that, I laid in my room, and I purposely left the door open a little bit, and I kept laying there, seeing the door closing in my mind, laying there doing this over and over again in my head, and the door never closed. I was really bummed, but it was like this, but the mind blowing part was like, holy crap, maybe you can really do this. Maybe the Force really is real. So I got all excited, and I'm laying in bed that night trying to use the Force to close my bedroom door, but it didn't work.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. It was a fun experiment all the same.
Yes.
But that's my first honorable mention.
All right. Well, my, honorable mention is sort of somewhat related, and that's just, when I first got into Star Wars, and I realized just what a massive universe that Star Wars had created, it was beyond just the films, with the, you know, the books and the comics and the video games and all the other things out there. And when I was just a kid, realizing that this was out there, and I was just like, "Oh my gosh, there's more Star Wars," and I ate it up. Like a starving, I was going to say starving wildebeest, but that didn't make any sense.
I mean, it makes sense. It's not Star Wars related.
No.
Makes me think of Lion King.
Right, well, I was thinking more. I was trying to think more of something like
now.
A lion, but I was wildebeest came out and said. Anyway, but yeah, just the idea that there was all of this other stuff out there, and people don't give me this. Stuff that, you know, well, it's not canon anymore. Who cares? It's still fun to read. And
exactly.
I'm sure, you know, I've got a whole list of books that I'm trying to read, and on there is I, Jedi. So I have a copy that I got signed by Michael Stackpole at Phoenix Comic Con. So That was pretty cool. But yes, that's on my list of books to read sooner or later. Hopefully I'll get through it this summer. But yes, just the fact that it was so massive, and it continues to get bigger. So
yeah, they're not stopping.
Nope. Nope. And some of these new books that they've announced look pretty awesome. So, but anywho.
Yeah.
What's your other honorable mention?
My other honorable mention is, again, this is something I've talked about before, which is why it's just an honorable mention. It would be higher on my list if I'd never talked about it. But again, anything because we just talked about it too. But when I was first heard about the Power of the Force 2 line coming out, and again, in 1995, I had just become like a real big Star Wars fan. And the only toys I had to play with was those Bendems, which were not very exciting. and I mean, again, I told the story where I was at the mall. I picked up this Star Wars Galaxy magazine. There was this huge, the centerpiece article was all about these new Star Wars action figures coming out. And I was just like, George Lucas wants me to play. So, I mean, again, it was like this personal calling of like, yes, you need to play in this galaxy. So here's some toys to have fun with. They're all going to be jacked like He-Man. But yeah, I mean, I've told this story before, so I won't rehash it. But yeah, definitely that like blew my mind that I was going to be able to have new toys to play with. So because I was able to get at that point, I was able to get my hands on a few of my cousin's like old Star Wars toys. Mm-hmm. But he didn't have that many, and he was also very selective about when I could play with them. Uh-huh. So it was really exciting that I was going to be able to get my own new Star Wars toys.
Nice. So, you know, it's really neat and fun and cool that they're able to get so accurate now with these action figure sculpts. But for some reason, the giant He-Man Star Wars figures are just kind of cool in their own right. So, I still think that they're funny and awesome.
I agree. I think they are.
So, anyways, that was just a side note. I had to comment on it. All right. Well. Should we start the top five?
Let's start the top five, Jason. Wow.
Jason Hunt. No, okay, I'll go first. my number five is just the extent of Palpatine Sidious's plan. You know, as we progressed into the prequels and throughout the prequels and finding out just how much that Palpatine had to do with everything that was going on, how many pies he had his fingers in, and all the different people that he was manipulating, just the extent of the plan and his ability to adapt the plan to suit him was just mind-boggling. So I have to, you know, when I finally got the whole picture of just how in-depth and how big and how just devious this plan was, it just was like boom, blew my mind. And I really had no idea that somebody could come up with a plan that complex and that big and that and pull it off so well until the biggest villain of all in Star Wars did it. So
yes, Sidious is quite the manipulator. I think we have a 3-hour episode on that. So, yep.
The master of manipulation. Go back to our archives on StarWarsReport.com if you want to hear that. Yeah.
I would have never thought to bring that up, but yeah, that's a great point. I mean, talk about mind being blown. The fact that anytime you watch the prequels, everything happening is under the control of this one man. So
yeah,
that's pretty insane.
Yes, it is. What's your number five?
My number five. There's sound coming through my. I don't know. Oh, that was something else. Sorry. I thought there was something playing that I didn't have playing, so I got really worried for a second. Anyway, sorry. Off topic. My number five is I actually have a little sound clip.
Oh, you have a sound clip?
I do.
Entire generation, you've only been able to see it on a TV screen.
Now, Star Wars is back on the big screen. No one to stop us this time with newly enhanced visual effects.
Yeah!
No sound. And a few new surprises. Star Wars, the special edition, starts Friday at theaters everywhere.
Yeah! Do you remember that, Jason?
Oh, man. I have seen that trailer so many times now that I'm a huge Star Wars fan.
Yeah, so...
I didn't actually see the trailer before seeing the movies. I saw it afterwards, and I was like, that is the coolest trailer ever.
Yeah, and that was the thing. It came out shortly after I finally got the trilogy on VHS for Christmas that current year, the year just before. And I was watching TV one day, and I just saw that. And it's like, you know, you've only ever seen it on your TV screen. And then, you know, the X-Wing flies out of the little screen into the big, you know, into your big TV screen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this announcement of getting the special editions, I mean, it was awesome because I'd been a Star Wars fan for, you know, all of 2 years now. But, you know, my only experience of them was on, you know, TV. And again, at that young age, to some degree, I didn't really care because I was fine watching them on my little TV. And again, I had all the toys to play with. So it was all about recreating it anyway. But just the possibility to get to go see them for the first time for me in theaters was phenomenal. And obviously, like, I'd been a fan long enough that I'd pretty much memorized the movie. So the thought of getting new scenes and new whatever was so exciting. So, I mean, that just blew my mind. And that commercial was so well made, too. So it was yeah. perfect.
Oh, totally. Totally. And I'm sure if I had known of Star Wars before I saw the special editions and I saw that commercial, I would have just been all over it. But like I said, I've seen it that commercial several times, you know, numerous times since becoming a Star Wars fan and getting involved with all this community stuff. And it is still one of the best, like, commercials ever. So, yeah. But anywho, I'm going to jump into my number four.
Yeah.
And I just have one word: lightsabers. Honestly, as a kid, when I first saw Obi-Wan hand Luke the lightsaber and he turns it on, I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I got to see them a little bit in action with the Obi-Wan Vader fight, and then a little more in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi with the Vader Luke duels. I was like, oh, that's cool. And then seeing the trailer for The Phantom Menace, where Darth Maul ignites his double-bladed lightsaber at the end of the trailer, or beginning of the trailer, whatever it was, for The Phantom Menace. And I was just like, okay, lightsabers are officially the best thing ever. but honestly, every time I hear the ignition sound of a lightsaber, like on somebody's phone or something, or I see it on a screen in a video game, I'm watching the movies or like reading a book and I see the, you know, or in the comics, and I always think of the sound.
I love this. I love in the novels and in comics, they always refer to it as a snap hiss, which is like the perfect, that's such a great word to capture it. Cause it is, it's like a, you know,
it is. It's really cool. But, it's so awesome. And I honestly, lightsabers are my favorite weapon. Period, in any sort of movie franchise I've seen, anything. I love lightsabers, particularly the green ones. Green ones are the best.
Would you take a blue one before a red one?
Yes, I would take a blue one before a red one, but I would exchange it for a green one ASAP. But yes, no, lightsabers still get me excited every time I see them or play with the ones that I've got, you know, they still get me so excited. So having my mind blown way back then as a kid and having them still be that awesome thing that they were to me then, now, I have to put them on my list, so...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love lightsabers too, Jason. I mean, I was a blaster man most of my life, but as I got older, I was like, I'm trading in my blaster for a lightsaber.
That has changed everything.
It really did. It really did. I mean, because I think in the original trilogy, blasters were the cool weapon, and lightsabers were awesome, but you could have just as much fun with a blaster. But by the time we get to the prequels, it's like, nope, lightsaber.
Oh, yeah.
So...
Oh, yeah.
but for me, my number four, and this may come up on your list because I kind of stole it from an example you gave me, But and the only reason this beats out my number five is because of the fact that I experienced this in a community. And it was last 2 years ago now. Oh my God, it's been too long, Jason. Two years ago at C6, when we all got to watch, you know, all of us, you know, the people from Star Wars Report, Riley, Bethany, Aaron, Steve Glosson, the Coens, I mean, Chris Smith, you know, this was fantastic when we saw the trailer to season 5 of The Clone Wars. And you see Darth Sidious whip out 2 lightsabers to fight Darth Maul and Savage Opress. I mean, the reaction in that studio, that arena, whatever you want to call it, was out of this world. Absolutely out of this world. I mean, it blew my mind that happened, that we were going to get to see Darth Sidious really just tear it up. Because I think all of us knew, you know, when Darth Maul came back and he's doing all these things behind the scenes, it's like Sidious needs to respond to this in some way, shape, or form, you know? And to see him, like, to get that little teaser in that trailer, oh my gosh, it was just awesome. Absolutely awesome. I mean, that's what everybody was talking about pretty much the rest of the weekend, you know? I mean, it was like, did you see that? And everybody's like, yeah, of course we saw it, but like, oh my gosh, can we see it again, right? And it was also on a big screen too. I mean, it was awesome, absolutely awesome. And again, just to experience that with all of you guys as well, it wasn't like something I experienced and then I could talk about. It was something we all experienced together. And we all had that same visceral reaction of just like, this is going to be great. This is going to blow everything else from the Clone Wars out of the water. So that's my number 4.
Yeah. I will reserve comment.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, but moving on to number 3, I just got to have the Yoda Dooku fight from episode 2. Blew my mind. And the only reason it's not higher is because we knew it was coming. We knew he was going to get out his lightsaber and he was going to start taking care of business. But I did not expect it to be that awesome when I saw it. You know, and of course, I've recounted the story a couple times before, but just the excitement in the theater when I saw it for the first time was palpable. You know, you could almost feel it in the air. As soon as
I can feel it coming in the air and die. Sorry.
As soon as Dooku says, it is obvious this contest cannot be decided by our knowledge of the Force, but by our skills with the lightsaber, and he pulls out his saber, the excitement just starts to rise, and then Yoda pulls out his in that awesome stunt that he pulls when he just pulls back his cloak and holds out his hand, and a lightsaber flies from his belt to his hand, and
not to mention the choir, like, rising.
Oh, I know. The choir right there, it was so great. The choir could not have been more perfect in my head either, because that's what I was... And it was so exciting and so awesome to finally see Yoda be the great warrior that we'd heard that he was. And that we got to see it in this dramatic fashion. And the way that he completely kicked Dooku's butt. So, you know, I'm a huge fan of Dooku, but honestly, Yoda just owned Dooku in that scene. So, I I've mentioned it before, and it was probably one of the most exciting takeaways from that first viewing in the theater after seeing Attack of the Clones. So I have to put it on my list because my mind was blown totally and completely.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I would have been a little shocked had this not been on your list. And, you know, if it's definitely like if we had been relegated when you opened my mind to what else we could include, like if I was because initially I was just thinking all in universe stuff, this probably would have at least been an honorable mention for me, because I've got to be honest, my initial reaction to that, like especially when we saw that it was going to happen in one of the trailers, my mind was blown. I don't like it anymore. I don't like the idea of Yoda fighting in the prequels. I know people might take issue with that. Not because I think it was poorly done. It looks fine. It's great. But again, it's just, in my opinion, Yoda should never have been that type of warrior. But all that aside, I can't lie. I freaking loved that when I saw it. And I had the same reaction, too, in the theaters when it first came out. Was like, oh my gosh, that just happened. That was amazing. And that's honestly what kept me. I mean, I saw Attack of the Clones more than any other Star Wars movie in theaters. I think I saw it 6 or 7 times.
Nice.
Which was the most of all the prequels. Yeah, and in the special editions, I saw them maybe twice each. But like even Episode 3, I only saw it 4 times in theaters. I saw Attack of the Clones at least 6, maybe 7 times. And the primary drawback was the Yoda Dooku duel. So yeah, I mean, while I don't care for it anymore as much, I don't hate it or anything. But I don't have that same response anymore. But yeah, I can't lie. It's definitely. I mean, the initial response was yes, Yoda with a lightsaber.
Oh yeah, and I'm pretty sure there were people cheering. In my theater.
Oh, there were in mine too. Yeah. Yeah,
it was like
even
you couldn't
it, like,
help yourself.
Oh,
you
yeah,
couldn't help yourself.
Even like the last time I saw it in theaters, I saw it at like $1.50 movie theater. It had been out for a couple months at this point. You know, everybody in there has seen it at least a few times, and there's still like some cheers going on as soon as he force calls the lightsaber to his hand. I mean, it's such a, it's awesomely done. So
it's terrific. It is terrific.
Yeah.
But yes, the only reason it's not higher on my list is because we knew it was coming.
Right.
Right. Due to those trailers. So, and action figures. Yeah. But.
Those things. Yeah.
What's your number three?
So, my number three comes from a movie known as The Empire Strikes Back. I got a little sound clip.
Okay.
Aren't you afraid the Empire is going to find out about this little operation? Shut you down? It's always been a danger, but it looms like a shadow over everything we've built here. But things have developed that'll ensure security. I've just made a deal that'll keep the Empire out of here forever.
We would be honored if you would join us.
I had no choice. They arrived right before you did. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, too.
I love that scene.
Nice. Nice.
I mean, it's just, to this day, you know, it blows my mind every time I see it. Which is it might be an odd thing to blow your mind, because, again, I know what's coming as soon as they get, you know, as soon as he mentions that deal, I know what's coming. I know what that deal is. It's not a fight,
right.
You know, our heroes are in trouble, but I just love it. Like, I get so excited when I see that scene coming, because it just, I don't know. Cause the first time I saw it, I didn't see that coming. You know, I figured they were finally safe and sound. Everything was going to be okay. Even though Luke has already had that, you know, premonition that something bad's going to happen to his friends, everything just seems totally fine. And when he opens that door and you just see Darth Vader at the other end of the table, it's just like, what? What? Are you kidding me? No. He opened the wrong door. You're supposed to go to the next dining room table. Right? Like, Lando, you made a mistake, silly. I mean, that scene still just blows my mind. And also, just Han Solo's reaction to just that blaster draw is incredible, absolutely incredible. And I will say, part of that scene was the reason I fell in love with it too. Is actually in the novel, the Empire Strikes Back novel. I almost remember it verbatim because I just reread that scene over and over again. It talks about how Han, who's one of the quickest draws in the galaxy, probably made a draw in record time, and it was still not fast enough. And it's just like, it's incredible, like. It doesn't matter how skilled these non-force users are, Darth Vader's still going to have the upper hand. I mean, it was just like such a humbling moment for everybody except Darth Vader. And I don't know, that scene just blows my mind still to this day. I mean, even though I know what's coming, I just love it. I absolutely love it. And then the sound of, you know, I mean, this is not necessarily a mind-blowing part, but even just that whole scene, the way it comes together, you got that really cool music, and then the spurs of Boba Fett as he walks out into the room, you know, and it's just, oh, it just, it's, I love it. I absolutely love it.
Nice. Yeah. I just have to clarify something here real quick, but my list is something that could completely change on a moment's notice. This is just what it is today.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And honestly, I had completely forgotten about about that scene and about the scene in the cave where Vader shows up on Dagobah, or at least the vision of Vader, you know, and just how, you know, watching those as a kid, I was just like, no, he can't be here. He can't be there. And being completely shocked, you know, and, you know, that he was, you know, in both of those cases. So it's a really good pick. I like, and thanks for bringing that back to my remembrance, because I mean, come on, I mean, who saw that coming? I mean, now that you've seen it, you know, you see Chewie start getting a little antsy, and you know, he's like, something's not right, and you're like, yeah, there's a trap coming, you know. Yeah. It's a trap. but yeah, no, I mean, he's, Lando's like, yeah, I've just made a deal with the Empire to keep, you know, this place safe forever, you know, out of the hands of the Empire forever. And the door opens and Vader's there. And I'm like, what? It was supposed to be out of the hands of the Empire forever, yeah. You know. But yeah, and I was like, oh, what? But then, like, and also I had the same reaction to, you know, Vader showing up in the cave on Dagobah. So, you know, it's...
You so lost.
What, yeah. What's in there? To take with you. And I'm like, okay, what is that supposed to mean? And then Vader shows up and I'm like, that's not what he took with him. you know, at first as a kid, but it was, but yeah, now I understand what all that means. And oh, anyways, good picks. Thank you.
And again, so, yeah, it was tough because it's like, people probably don't consider that mind blowing, but it blew my mind when I saw it. So That's also one of my favorite scenes in Star Wars. So
it's a good one.
It is.
It is a good one.
What's your number two, Jason?
My number two, and you mentioned this earlier, and that is the Sidious igniting his sabers in the season 5 trailer of the Clone Wars. And let me set the scene for you here, folks.
Hold on. I'm going to sit back for a second.
Okay. So we have just sat through a panel with Dave Filoni talking about the Clone Wars. No, this was... was this the premiere panel where they were showing the this is when they showed the last two episodes of season 4 and the first episode of season 5.
Yes. And then they showed the trailer after that, I think, right?
Yes. But Dave Filoni came out to talk between the episodes and the trailer. So we had just finished watching the first episode of season 5 of the Clone Wars, which was awesome. Dave Filoni was just talking about it and everything, and then all of a sudden he's like, I guess we have something a little special for you. How about a trailer for season 5? And everyone was like, yay, whatever. And then there's about a minute or so of just some cool action stuff and other things going on, and then suddenly the screen goes black. And you hear Palpatine laughing. And then he says, remember, there can only be two, and you are no longer my apprentice. And then it comes back up, and he's one lightsaber, two lightsaber, and then it just, everything and everybody in the room went nuts. It was unreal. Nobody thought we were going to get a Sidious duel. Nobody thought Sidious is going to leave Coruscant in the Clone Wars. At least I didn't. And then we get this, and it's epic. It's awesome. It looks fantastic, and it's one of the best duels from the Clone Wars, I think.
I mean, I'd play it right up there with some of the ones in the movies. That's how good it is.
I would too. But and just the lines to go with it, you know, there can only be two, and you are no longer my apprentice. And he's, you know, he was taking care of business. He was getting his hands dirty, and nobody thought that, at least I didn't, Sidious was actually going to get his hands dirty directly like that. And so just the story possibilities and the awesomeness of the action and the moment with everybody there watching this with a whole bunch of Star Wars fans and a whole bunch of awesome friends, getting shown it by Dave Filoni himself. I think Steve said it best as we were leaving the panel afterwards, saying, okay, I need to check the back wall for my brain on the way out. Because everybody's minds We're blown. I just have to. It is still one of my favorite just Star Wars fan moments ever to this point, and it is definitely one of the things that has blown my mind the most, especially in recent memory as far as Star Wars is concerned. So it was pretty darn epic, yeah. I have to say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I already said my piece on it, so
I
can't help but agree with you.
All right, so. Awesome. Well, what is your number two?
Well, my number two, we're going to get a quick little sound clip real quick, Rack. Again.
Next time I should send you.
I know you should. I'm sorry. I totally hate this mixer. I just like to play with it a little. Sorry.
It's fine.
Here we go.
Okay.
We'll handle this.
We'll take the long way.
I'm getting excited just listening to that.
Makes you want to go watch it, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes. Oh, man. So that's your number two?
My number two is the Duel of the Fates. You know, especially that part. Because you knew it was coming. We knew it was coming. We saw the trailer, right? Mm-hmm. But I'll never forget the amount of chills I got from watching that the first time. I mean, literally, I had goosebumps all over my skin. I mean, this was just, it was beyond any sort of fight we'd ever seen in Star Wars, ever. And it, you know, it was incredible. And specifically, the first part is really cool. You know, you know, we'll handle this. We'll take the long way. Padme, just come this way. I'll protect you. You know, it was like, oh my gosh, it was so cool. And I actually like how they like strip down their robes, because it's like, we got to be good and limber. This is going to be crazy, right? Mm-hmm. And the scene where the first two times, more than that, probably every time I saw it in theaters, and even probably the first couple times I watched it after it came out on VHS, the scene when, you know, Anakin destroys the destroyer droids and he takes off and he says, oh, it's on automatic pilot. And then it goes back, like, from all the way from the top, right? Like, we get the camera of zoom, like, from far away down of the duel, the three of them just going at it when the Duel of the Fates music playing so loud. I mean, even sometimes still watching that movie, I will get chills at that scene. Because we had never seen anything like this in Star Wars. I mean, we had some really cool duels in Empire and Jedi. I did not mention A New Hope. Because, come on. this was just unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable, what was going on in this duel. The choreography, the speed, the ferocity of Darth Maul. I mean, this was everything I'd wanted to see, and I didn't even know I wanted to see it. That's the thing. Like, even when I found out they were going to make a prequel trilogy, which was extremely exciting, which I don't know why that didn't make my list. I apologize, because I was excited. It did blow my mind. Just seeing that and not expecting it to be that good, just it blew my mind. I mean, it was literally like an ecstatic experience. It was unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. I'm using lots of adjectives here, but all of which mean the same thing. Just watching that duel was unbelievable. It still blows my mind just how good it is. You know, I mean, it's, even though we get all these great duels in Revenge of the Sith, they still, to me, do not match up to this duel. So that's my number two.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I have no idea why this missed my list. I guess it just didn't come to mind initially when I was trying to make it this afternoon. But awesome. Awesome, awesome. I can't say enough good things about that. It was pretty darn epic. And it still is so exciting, you know, when that happens, watching The Phantom Menace, you know, that it's like, okay, we secured the hangar. That was pretty easy. We got here, you know, things are going very well for us right now. We got the hangar secured. We got the pilots going up to space. All right, now it's time to start taking the palace. Let's go through here. And all of a sudden, there's one man standing in the doorway, and everybody freezes. Everybody freezes. Of course, he's a, you know, tattooed Sith Lord, but with a double-bladed lightsaber. but still.
Yeah, I wouldn't really want to mess with him.
I wouldn't either. I'm glad Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan did.
I love that line. We'll handle this.
We'll handle this. Yeah. Oh, it was so great. And the music to go along with it especially made it even more epic. So John Williams really knows what he's doing when it comes to Star Wars, I have to say. So.
Oh, yes.
But I guess that means we've gotten to my number one.
We have gotten to your number one.
Awesome. Well, this isn't like a complete like excitement-inducing, mind-blowing moment for me. But this is something that, especially after watching the second half of Return of the Jedi this afternoon, I felt like I wanted to put at number one, at least today. And that is during Return of the Jedi when we get the line from Luke to the Emperor, "I am a Jedi like my father before me." And it's not the line necessarily that blows my mind.
Okay. Go ahead.
It's not the line necessarily that blows my mind. It's the fact that he's in the middle of the Death Star confronting the Emperor while there's a battle raging on around him and Imperial Red Guards and Stormtroopers all over the place, and he throws his lightsaber away. I'm like, what? You're behind enemy lines, basically, and you're going to make a moral point here and get rid of your lightsaber in front of the Emperor. You know, obviously, I understand, you know, looking back and analyzing it now, I understand why he did it and everything. It's fine, whatever. But at the time, as a kid, I'm like, you don't do that. You don't throw away your only means of defense when you're in this position. So I don't know. It's still sometimes it catches me, you know, like that, like, Luke, think ahead just a little bit here. I know you're making a point, and it's a great point that you're making, and I love you so much for the line there. I am a Jedi like my father before me. But say it while putting the lightsaber on your belt rather than throwing it away. You know, I sometimes get that way, but, you know, and I'm not criticizing him or anything, but it's just he has the audacity, and I mean this in a good way, the audacity and the confidence in the Force that he is, you know, his complete trust is in the Force at this point and in the redemption of his father, that he will throw away his lightsaber in order to bring Anakin back and in order to fulfill the destiny that he has in the Force for this moment. So there's so much in that one scene going on, and it's more than just I am a Jedi like my father before me. And that throwing of a lightsaber definitely says a lot. It says so many different things. So that's why, since I just watched that this afternoon before recording, I had to put it at number one today. So,
It was kind of fresh in your head, huh?
It was very fresh. So, so yes, that's my number one today.
Again, yeah, I mean, probably going to fluctuate with me too, and you know, I wanted to make that almost my number one as well, but I was like, well, is my mind really blown? I guess not. And I pitched another show idea to you, which we'll probably do eventually, and I think it'll be on that list pretty high, so I'm just going to save it for another episode. But absolutely, this scene is just phenomenal, and I like what you keyed in on there, though. You know, it's not necessarily the line, which we have talked about a lot in previous episodes, but it's the fact that he throws the lightsaber away. It's mm-hmm. like you're here to hopefully destroy the two evil forces in the galaxy, but now you're unarmed. What are you doing? Come on, man. Really? Now is the time you're going to be like, you know what? I don't need this anymore. It's just like,
now is the time that you take to heart, you know, the Force is only for knowledge and attack, never, or knowledge and defense, never attack. Now you're going to take that to heart.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, absolutely great, great scene, Jason. What a great number one. But my number one, and I'm honestly surprised. I thought that we might have shared this as our number one. Mm-hmm. And this is to this day the most my mind has ever been blown by anything Star Wars related. And it happened last October when we found out that we were getting a sequel trilogy.
Oh, my mind.
I don't think I've ever been so joyous, and I picked that word intentionally, not happy, joyous, from anything in Star Wars in my life, you know. And what a perfect time for it to have happened. I mean, I we've been doing this podcast for about 2 years at that point. I had this strong community of Star Wars friends, which I had not had really ever in my life. So it wasn't just something for me to get excited about on my own and maybe share with one buddy of mine. It was something I got to share with a family. And, you know, like everybody that I cared about that day was putting stuff on their Facebook. Even people, even my friends that don't care about Star Wars were like texting me like, hey, did you hear? It's like, yes, of course I heard. And like, I remember calling you and you were, I think you were riding your bike or something.
Yes, I was riding my bike home from school. And my phone had completely blown up, and I had no idea that it happened. I think I was walking in the door to put my bike away when you called me. And I, you know, you're calling me, and I noticed, you know, all the icons for, you know, texts, and I think I had another missed call as well. And I was like, what happened? And you told me as I'm walking in the door with my bike, and I was like, what? And I immediately jumped online. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, that night, the last night I was at C6. Well, it was really the last night we all spent together. We were at C6 up in the Cohen suite, otherwise known as heaven. like Steve made that great point. He's like, you know, cause they, right. We were supposed to get this big announcement Sunday, and I was so bummed I wasn't going to be there for it. Cause I had to, my flight was leaving so early on Sunday. And, you know, you were like, I promise I'll text you as soon as we get it. And Steve was predicting it. He's like, it's something big. It's not just, he was like, 789, drop the mic. That's where he started introducing that idea to us. You know, he's like, 789, drop the mic. Right? Like, I mean, and I remember when Steve said that, I was like, I know. I don't see that. Like, I wanted it so bad, mm-hmm. but I just didn't want to, because even like in some way accepting that that was what was going to happen. But if I had any way accepted that that was a reality and that could actually happen, and then if it didn't, I knew I was going to be devastated. So mm-hmm. I was really glad that I didn't buy into it, because obviously we didn't get that announcement. Although, like many of us have kind of brought up, I think there was the intention of announcing it at C6 that summer, but for some reason it was delayed a few months. I mean, who knows? Maybe it was legal things, whatever, doesn't matter. But, you know, the fact that they had Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher there, George Lucas, who wasn't even supposed to be there, showed up, right? Like, you knew something big was in the works. And then it was like, oh, Celebration Europe. It's like, come on, really? I mean, that's
Celebration. It was Celebration Europe and the release dates for episodes 2 and 3 in 3D.
Right.
Which is like, happened.
Again, right. So it was like all like exciting news, but it was nothing to like really shake a fist at. Right. And, you know, when I got home from work, I think Chris Smith was the one that he sent me a text, and I hopped on the computer and I just saw it everywhere, and then I immediately called you, and it was just like, and again, it was just this palpable joy that I was able to share immediately with you, and then, you know, with Chris and Cranky, the Cohens, Steve, the Rileys, the Blantons, you know? Bethany, you are now known as Bethany Riley. I mean, I've never been at such a high in my life. And I remember, too, like teaching was kind of sucking at that point in the year, too. Like, I just wasn't feeling teaching at that point. Like, I don't want to, like, paint this fake picture of, like, oh, my life sucked and then this made it all better. It wasn't, like, it wasn't that dramatic. But, like, nothing – my life was very bland. Let's put it that way. At that point, like, I was – bored of what I was doing. There was nothing that exciting going on in life, but then this happened. And the reason I use the word joy is because it's like, it wasn't just that I was joyous about this really cool new Star Wars movies that we were going to be getting, but also it just, I don't know, it made me so joyous that literally like everything else in my life automatically like came into perspective of like, everything's fine. Everything is going well. I like teaching. What am I, you know, like it just kind of changed my perspective because it's like, we never thought this could happen, and it happened, right? Like, something impossible became possible. And, again, like, the immediate thought wasn't like, well, are they going to be good? Who's going to direct them? What's it going to be about? It wasn't even that. It was just like, holy crap, new Star Wars movies, and I have a family to share it with. Like, exactly. This is amazing.
And, of course, like everybody and their mother, you and I jumped on and recorded a quick episode to get out, like everybody else. So, although, I do have to say, we were the first ones to get an episode out on the Star Wars Report network. So,
booyah!
So, to put that out there. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Good job, Blanton.
But, I mean, basically, I got back. You told me about it. And I said, let me get caught up. And you're like, let's just record about it. Okay, it's like, okay, let me just read things, eat something, and then we'll talk. Yeah. So, and we did, and it was awesome. And you posted it that night, I think. So,
yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, I almost didn't believe you when you told me. I almost didn't believe you, because through different, you know, forums and other online things and, you know, weird websites claiming to have the episode 7, 8, and 9 scripts, you know, over the years, I'm like, this is never going to happen. It will never happen. 7, 8, and 9 will never happen. And
it happens.
Steve Glosson was painting this picture. You know, he wanted to mess with everybody, and so this was his little deal going into C6, is he was going to convince everybody that it was 7, 8, and 9 was coming. He didn't believe it, but he made some very compelling points to back up his fake assumption here. And and I started getting a little hope going, oh, that could happen. It could happen. Could it? Could it happen? Is this something that would be possible? And then, of course, it didn't happen, and I was like, nah, never mind. And I completely – I didn't forget about it, but I just sort of put that in the back of my mind and didn't think about it very much. And then you called me that day after my phone blew up, and I didn't know because I was riding my bike. And I was like, no. My first thought was no. And then you were like, no, really, really? It's on StarWars.com.
It can't be fake.
And I was like, what? And it is such an exciting time now because of it. But yes, I have to agree. The whole idea that we got to share it with this family that we really, at that point, had finally gotten to really put faces with names and voices and really get to know as people rather than as other podcasting personalities on the internet, because we had just been at Celebration 6. So when that happened, we were able to share it with everybody else and talk about it with everybody else. And because that was everything everybody was talking about for the next 2-3 weeks, it was so great and so awesome. And that my dream of being involved with something Star Wars was reborn. So hopefully that will still happen. And if I have anything to say about it, it will. But yes, I will have to agree with you. I will just move everything down one on my list and have this as my number one. Sarah number one, and we both have 2 honorable mentions. There we go.
There we go. We're all matched up.
Yes. So that's good. That's good. I have to say yes. That blew my mind. And yeah, the whole family aspect to it was just incredible. So, but I think that's about it.
Yeah, those are moments that have blown our minds. And, you know, I think I did to you just there what you did to me the last time we were doing our, you know, actors we'd like to meet. And you were like, George Lucas. I'm like, dang it, I didn't know he was an option.
Yep, yep, yep. You just did that with me here.
Yeah.
For some reason, that didn't come to my mind when I was making my list, but it should have for obvious reasons. But anyways,
yeah,
yes. So those are our fireworks, the things that blew our mind.
Yes. If it was 4th of July, which will be here in Boston in an hour and a half, those are the things that would make them go boom. But before we finish, we have a great Larian inquiry from our friend Jackson Alonzo. He sent this to us on email, and he says, "Hey, Carl and Jason, this is Jackson. I have a question for the Larian Inquiry. In Episode 5, Obi-Wan says to Luke, 'If you choose to face Vader, you will do it alone. I cannot interfere.' But I remember reading in one of my Star Wars books that the spirit of Obi-Wan entered Luke and helped him fight off Vader. Why do you think Obi-Wan couldn't interfere on Cloud City, but his spirit entered Luke on a different occasion to help him drive off Vader?" This is a great question. It required some research, and Jason did the work, as per usual.
Just to clarify for folks that are interested or confused as to what he's talking about, this happened in Splinter of the Mind's Eye, which is, I think it was one of the very first Star Wars.
It was the novels. First Star Wars novel written, and it took. It was written before Empire came out, before anybody knew Darth Vader was Luke's father.
Right.
He was just the villain.
Right, so. And before people really realized that Episode 5 was going to have Obi-Wan's real first appearance to Luke in it. So,
right.
But yeah, so that's the story that he is referencing, and it is a very old and very dated book. I have never read it. Have you?
No, I've never actually read it.
So,
I mean, my response is, again, in first off, again, I wasn't even familiar with it until Jason kind of did the research to find out where that came from. Splinter of Mind's Eye, I've heard people that do enjoy it. It was written by Alan Dean Foster, who supposedly ghost wrote the first Star Wars novel. I don't know if he actually did or not. Mark Herleman and Nathan Butler probably know. But, I've never read it, so I don't really have much of a comment. But all the same, whether or not, obviously Splinter of Mind's Eye is no longer considered canon. But all that aside, I think in response to what Alonzo's asking, I just use his last name. Jackson is asking is why isn't Obi-Wan able to do it in Empire? And I think the reason is because this is a decision Luke is making against the counsel of Yoda and Obi-Wan. He's going to have to face the consequences on his own because this is his decision. This is his bad decision in their opinion. I think that's the case. Is Obi-Wan also maybe too, like, just because he's a Force ghost, he's one with the Force, he's still not able to like come in and manipulate things to make things better, because that wouldn't be letting life happen, according to its own way. Again, it makes me think of like what Qui-Gon says at the end of Phantom Menace, when Obi-Wan's asking, do you think the Gungans will really listen to the Queen here? And he says, I don't know, and we can't use our power to help her. Because, again, you can't use the Force to manipulate the timeline of current events, because that's just manipulative. That's not using the Force for the good. Mm-hmm. So I think for Obi-Wan to some degree, maybe he actually is limited in his abilities of what he's able to do. Like, he can't go in and fight Vader as a Force ghost. Because that's not his role at this point. His role is to train Luke to do that on his own. Luke is not ready. Therefore, if he's really going to make this brash decision, he's got to face the consequences on his own. So I think that's what it is. I think that's why Obi-Wan can't interfere, is because he's got to let Luke make that decision, make that failure on his own.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on that. And I can't exactly comment as to why he was able to do it in Splinter of the Mind's Eye before he confronted Vader in Empire Strikes Back. But I'm going to totally agree with Carl on this, and I think Carl said it best, so I'm not going to say much. But also we have to consider that, Obi-Wan is still figuring out this whole Force ghost thing. He's a little more transparent in The Empire Strikes Back than he is in Return of the Jedi. So,
it's a good point.
And it's only been 3 years since he died, I guess. But his spirit's been out there. But it's the whole, being able to appear to people. But I think part of the ability to appear to others, may mean that, they can't necessarily take over others. And I don't think Obi-Wan would want to invade Luke like that either, because then it's not Luke doing the journey, it's Obi-Wan. And this is Luke's journey, and this is Luke's decision, and Luke has to accept the consequences that come with it, good or bad. So, especially at this point, now that Luke knows more, Obi-Wan is not going to step in where he shouldn't be.
Right.
And I'm guessing especially at this point, you know, Vader's got this trap very well laid. I'm guessing the dark side is too heavy and too prevalent around where Vader is laying this trap that Obi-Wan probably couldn't, even if he wanted to, you know, join in and interfere. But I don't know that for certain. I don't know the limitations of Force ghosts, if there is any. but I think Carl said it best, so I'm gonna leave it at that.
Yeah, sorry to commandeer that.
No, that's fine. You had it more thought out than I did, so I'm perfectly fine with letting you take the lead on that one.
Oh, thank you. So there you go. There's an episode. A good one, if I may say so.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, before we go, just want to mention again about iTunes reviews. Again, maybe in light of putting up the incorrectly the last episode into Beyond the Films, we got a bunch of new likes on Facebook, so thank you for that. We got a lot of downloads, which is also awesome. And we got two new reviews on iTunes. One was really wonderful, and one was not so wonderful. Yes. We've only ever gotten one negative review on iTunes before this. And that one, honestly, like Jason and I both could give, honestly, two shits, excuse my French, because that guy was a jerk. He just didn't like the way we view Star Wars, and that's fine. Don't listen to us. That's fine with us. But this person was, Jason and I are fine with criticism. Absolutely. We welcome it. We invite it.
As long as it's constructive.
And this wasn't. It was just rude in both of our opinions. This person is entitled to their opinion. They basically... Do you have the review up? Do you want to read it? Or?
I do. I do have it right here. He says that our podcast is more of the same. Another echo chamber Star Wars podcast. He, by the way, gave us a 2-star rating. He says, if you want any actual analysis or thoughtful discussions, this is certainly not the place for it. If you like really bad analysis, there was plenty of that. Just more fanboys being fanboys. So there's that. First of all, I just have to say, what's wrong with being a fanboy? You say that like it's a bad thing, and I don't see why that is. But, as to bad analysis, maybe, you know, on an episode where we're talking about our favorite things, or, you know, things that don't particularly, you know, that are taste related, I don't think you're going to get... which our last episode was, I don't think you're going to get necessarily analysis much out of it. That's, you know, a taste and a preference thing. So whatever. We do have some awesome character analysis episodes if you want to go back and check those out in our archive. But did you have any other things you wanted to say?
Yeah, I mean, again, I want to be clear. That's fine if you – we're not – Jason and I aren't trying to like make people feel bad if they have something critical to say. That's absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. But maybe be a little more constructive. Why did you think our analysis was poor? I mean, be a little bit kinder maybe. And it's fine. I mean, Jason and I are both well aware when you do stuff like this, when you put something out there in the internet, people tend to be cowardly and say things from the safety of their keyboard. And that's fine. That's absolutely fine. You are entitled to your opinion. We welcome criticism. I obviously, we both disagree. We think we offer very good analysis on the show, and I think Jason and I both pride ourselves on the fact that we have something unique going in on our show, in, you know, compared to some of the other Star Wars podcasts. Not that we're better or worse, but just I think we provide really good analysis. And again, maybe if all these listened to was, you know, which actors we most wanted to meet episode, of course, there's not a lot of deep analysis there. It's just us having fun. It kind of like this episode. It was a lot of fun. There wasn't a whole lot of delving into things.
No.
And yeah, I don't mean to sit here and be all defensive, like, oh, how you don't like our stuff. Now I'm going to fight back. That's fine. It's fine if you don't like our show. Absolutely fine. But Jason and I are proud of it. And, you know, and I know that there's several other people that enjoy it. So I appreciate that. So that being said, maybe you want to write something that's, you know, a little bit more positive to help us out a bit, you know. but, you know, again, whoever this is, we appreciate your opinion. You know, you're a little bit rude. That's fine. You're welcome to be rude if you want to be. But you're lucky I'm not Darth Vader and I can force choke over the internet. so anyway, I'm just kidding. But
sort of.
So anyway, ask Joe Hogan what he thinks of us. I'll leave it at that.
Yes.
Joe's our bouncer. which means we're in trouble because he's not very big.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Maybe we need to hire a new bouncer.
look at Steve Glosson. but in all seriousness, we do appreciate every review we've ever gotten. We appreciate all the likes on Facebook, especially. If you like our show, spread the word. We'd really appreciate it.
Indeed.
And Jason, you're going to start up a new poll. Do you want to announce that?
Yes. So I will post this on our social media shortly after this episode goes live, just so it doesn't, you know, conflict with that. But our new poll, which we will announce the results for on our next episode, is going to be, what is your favorite Star Wars movie soundtrack? And this is, you know, obviously not scientific. If you want to include more than one, that's fine, whatever. But this is the soundtracks as a whole, which as a whole soundtrack is your favorite. Not just the individual songs or anything, but which film soundtrack as a whole is your favorite overall. So we will get that up ASAP as soon as this episode goes live on the interwebs. But yeah, looking forward to see what people have to say.
Yeah,
which of the six films and the Clone Wars? There, that's also available if you want to. I probably wouldn't.
I wouldn't
put my
either,
vote for the Clone Wars. Not that it's bad.
No, but it's not nearly as iconic, and nor should it be. Just to help people, because I know that's a daunting task even for me to think of which is my favorite. I think for me, when I think of my favorite, because again, I love every Star Wars soundtrack. To me, it's which one do I find myself listening to in its entirety the most? Mm-hmm. You know,
if that helps you, great. If that's not necessary for you to make your decision, that's fine. Whatever.
Yeah, because you might just be like, oh, absolutely, it's Phantom Menace, or oh yeah, absolutely, it's Shadows of the Empire, which does have a soundtrack, by the way.
Yes, it does, and actually, so does a lot of the more recent video games.
Oh, right.
Force Unleashed 1 and 2 both have it, and so does Knights of the Old Republic 1 and 2, and the Old Republic video game. So there's actually some pretty good stuff on those. The Force Unleashed 1 and 2 is actually really good soundtracks, by the way, if anybody wants to check those out. I highly recommend it. But if you want to respond to our poll or submit a Larian inquiry or just get our thoughts on something else, Carl, where can people find us on the internets?
They can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/wampuslayerpodcast. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampuslayer. And you can send us an email at wampuslayerpodcast@gmail.com.
All right. And any final thoughts before we wrap this episode up?
I just love talking about how joyous I was. I'm feeling joyous again, bringing up those feelings from the sequel trilogy announcement. My Star Wars family, I'm giving you a big Wampa hug.
Yes. Oh, and I join in on that. Oh, yes. Awesome.
Nothing like loving from Carl and Jason. Oh, yeah.
And with that, this has been episode 94 of the Wampuslayer podcast.
94?
Fireworks in the Lair.
Is it number
94? Excuse me, 92. I'm sorry. Let me start that over again. And with that, this has been episode 92 of the Wampuslayer podcast, Fireworks in the Lair. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampuslayer.
I see a wedge. Good work.
There for a second.
I'm your grandpa.
I hope not.